You're listening to Spilling Ink.
Hi, everybody. This is Jason from Spilling Ink, the talk show that takes you behind the book to meet the artists and authors in the publishing industry. I know things look a little bit different today, and don't be afraid. It's just a little change. I'm trying out a new video format for the show where I'm going to be doing on-location interviews. And with me today, I have my very first guest in this new format, Drew Prost-Jensen. How's it going today, Drew?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well. So, Drew, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm just your average goofy schmuck, born and raised to be creative, and writing is one of the avenues that I utilize to do that in.
You were an engineer for quite some time, right?
I faked an engineering career for about 35 years.
Yeah. I was going to say, and yet you're still artistic.
It was funny. I wanted to get into something more visual artsy, figured out I was colorblind, and so I gave that up, which was stupid. Because with all the specialization now, there's people who can specialize in the color. But I still enjoyed doing drawings, so I started mechanical drawings and just worked my way up the ladder. So.
That's fantastic. Now, you've been doing a lot of poetry, is that correct?
A lot of poetry, short stories, yep.
Okay,
yep.
Now, and how did you get into the creative writing? When did that first start for you?
I enjoyed haikus in my 45-minute commute just to kill time. You'd see me driving along, somebody'd mention it later. I saw you driving and you were doing this. Well, I was counting syllables. And they were gone instantly. It's not like you write them down, you know, as you're driving and stuff. But I enjoyed the mental challenge. It was just something to do as I was driving, you know. And then when I retired about 10 years ago, I had more time and started doing more of it.
Okay.
Everything's real simple, a haiku, a limerick. My preferred style, I refer to as Seussian. I write a four-line verse like Dr. Seuss, second and fourth line rhymes typically. Then you can try and get a little tricky from there, but I typically don't. The KISS method, keep it simple.
Okay. And I've actually seen you perform a lot, and you do a lot of performance art, right?
I enjoy performing a lot. Like I say, I enjoy mixing art forms a great deal. And so the theatrical aspects of performing my written work. I mean, virtually everything that I write is autobiographic anyway, and so I've lived it. So it's not that big a leap to live parts of it again, you know? But this time, you know, with a rhythm, perhaps, in rhyme, or just storytelling. Storytelling is a great deal of fun.
Now, you do a lot of poetry slam kind of things, or open mic type of events, correct?
Yep. There's groups in most any creative city, college towns especially. I live in the middle of the Mitten, and so there's several groups there in the Lansing area, with MSU being there, LCC, and that sort of thing. Plus, I really enjoy being odd man out, you know, walking without tightrope walking without a net. So I crash a great many music open mics just because, so people are going, I don't know about this, and see if I can make it stick, you know, stick my landing.
And what's your success rate like with those?
I have never had anybody, you know, throw me out by the collar, you know.
Okay.
I've bombed before, you know, and that's just a learning experience. But you get self-confidence from that. You know, that's why I really started performing in the first place. A good boss had said, you know, you're just too shy and quiet to get your ideas across in meetings. So we're going to send you to the Dale Carnegie course. And it's a famous course. Dale Carnegie wrote, you know, How to Win Friends and Influence People and such. And it was to bring people out of their shell. And it failed miserably for me. But I took the boss's advice, you know. Okay, I've got to be more outgoing. And that's when it occurred to me, I've always been a horrible smartass. And so it occurred to me, well, take some stand-up comedy classes. And if I can stand on stage and have people laughing, whether at me or with me, you know, dozens, hundreds sometimes, maybe I'll get over it. And it did. And I just, it's just such an adrenaline rush now.
That's fantastic. Now, how do you go from zero to poem? How do you go from just these first inklings that you have in your head to actually composing the poem? What's your process?
That's a tough one. That is a real tough one. I am not quite sure. Often a line will just come. What I hear the other day, somebody said, I was at a concert, and one of the people just going to introduce a song said, everything is a metaphor. And that wasn't in the song, so it's fair game. And that's got a nice rhythm to it. That's a first line, you know? The first line then very much sets the rhythm of subsequent lines. Everything is a metaphor. I mean, like I say, it's rhythm. Peter?
And a lot of your poetry, it seems like you do have some whimsical elements to them. However, some of your poetry is, and I don't necessarily mean to say dark, but very heartfelt. You can tell it came from someplace really deep inside of you.
It's funny. Growing up, my folks were photojournalists. I grew up on fatal accidents and house and barn fires. And, you know, there was no time to call up babysitters and see if somebody's available. So mom and dad were photojournalists, and we 2.4 kids were in the back of the station wagon watching this. And we'd get out, you know, and there'd be a barn fire, and man, that smells like a barbecue. And then you'd look, and there was your classmate standing next to you, and that was his horse that you smelled, or something. And so I learned to suppress all emotion until I hit about 50, and then it was like a switch was thrown. And I mean, I can't hear the soundtrack of a SPCA commercial, you know, for abused animals or something without
Sarah McLachlan.
Sarah McLachlan, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. That's what I was specifically. Yeah, it's like I gotta. You'll have to excuse me, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A lot of that I let out in poetry or short stories, and even performing it. You know, I've gotten self-confident enough that I can cry while I'm performing it. Total disclosure, I'm Jason's father-in-law, so his kids are my grandkids. I've written poems about them, and sometimes I will do a poem about your kids, my grandkids, in front of them, and I've made the mistake of looking at them, and it's tough without looking at them. I look at them, and I just start bawling.
I think one time, didn't you actually have Emma, for whom you had written a poem, didn't you have her on stage with you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I enjoy the performance art aspect of it. And, yeah, that poem I wrote about Emma, it ties to a picture. And so we choreographed that at the appropriate time. I'd give her a nudge, and, you know, she'd be holding the picture, and then she'd turn it around and show it. And I it's very much performance art. Performance aspect of it, and I really enjoy it. And I can incorporate, you know, photography. You've perhaps seen my Cantastoria. Mm-hmm. Photography, like I say, all sorts of art forms. I've been doing a lot of art food lately, and incorporating poetry, interweaving that, as strange as that may be. So, you know, I want to figure out how to make food sing or something next. I don't know, but it's just like, well,
knowing you, you'll probably do it, and it'll be with uncooked fish.
That sounds good.
Now, do you do so much performance art? Do you ever get it given to any thought to publishing your work?
I've had a grand total of one thing published, I think, so far, and it's not something I work towards, and I'm kind of goofy in that I don't want to self-publish. wasn't it Jane Mansfield, supposedly, that was discovered at a soda counter, and an agent comes in and says, girl, I'm going to make you a star.
I want that's going to happen with you.
That's my plan.
Okay.
Which is a horrible plan.
We need
plan.
To start growing your hair out then.
Well, maybe I'm not going to be the next sex symbol, but, you know, I'd like somebody to see or hear my work and say, hey, you got any more of that? And, you know, I want to publish you. Although even then, some of the stuff I want to publish, format-wise, would be so artsy that I might have to do it myself, too. I've got two books that I'm working on.
Okay.
Yes and no. Yes, I'm a horrible person, and no, I have no idea why I'm still alive. But I want to put them in one book, so that when you go through the book this way, you are reading the yes stories, but then you can turn it over.
Okay.
Be the no cover, and you can go through it and read the no stories.
I like it. I like it. Well, we've got some rainfall, but this is just coming off the trees above us. I think that's
into each interview. Yes, a little rain must fall.
No, I think that's a fun idea. And even those of us who have self-published or that work with small press publishers, many of us are still waiting for that same moment, that same person. You get the phone call or you get the email from somebody at a Big Five office saying, mm-hmm. hey, I read this and I like it. I want you to be my next star. And mm-hmm. I think that's a dream for all of us. You know, everyone who's in the creative arts, we don't necessarily want to sell out, but we want to reach more people.
Yeah. So. Well, I consider every art form as a form of communication. And writing and performing is perhaps more literal, because there's really no difference between me talking to you and, oh, gee, it happens to be on video, and being on a stage and, you know, you're communicating, whether it's directly or through metaphor. But, you know, the visual arts are communication as well, and yeah. music, certainly.
Well, I'll tell you what. I am actually going to step out of the picture now, guys, and Drew is going to recite a few of his poems for us, and that's going to wrap up this short show for us today. We're just trying out the new format, so I hope you've enjoyed it, and we'll get Drew right back on in just a second here.
So, welcome to my marijuana plantation. As you can see, it's only late July, so we aren't getting buds yet, but I still whip out occasionally for just a little nip. It looks like it's going to be a good year. Seriously though, if I can do seriously, there is money to be made, occasionally, even though you don't have a big fancy contract, be on a bestseller list or anything, and that's through, competitions. Now, a lot of competitions, you get a laurel and hearty handshake, but, this particular haiku was the most profitable poem I've ever written. And it's funny, too, because it was for a big festival, and the top three places were going to perform their winning poetry at this festival. Cool. And so third place goes up on stage. And I have nothing wrong. I have no problem. There's nothing wrong with long, free-flowing, unstructured, non-rhyming poetry. I can appreciate that. But this was a crowd that was there for a festival. And they really didn't appreciate third place's long, meandering, unstructured poem. So there was polite applause when he was finally done. Then the gentleman signals over to the side of the stage, and his wife comes out with a guitar. And they then proceed to sing the same long, meandering, long, rhyming poem as a song. More polite applause. Second place comes out. And it is what I would refer to as a medium-length poem. But again, rather unstructured, not rhyming. But it was shorter than the first one, times two, so a little bit more applause. And then first place comes out, and that is this poem. Fishing tournament. It's a metaphor for life. Go get your line wet. And the crowd, and I stepped back and I said, thank you. And the crowd waited for the inevitable rest of it. And they figured out there wasn't any. And the crowd went nuts. And I'm still not sure if it was due to the quality of the poem or just my brevity. I don't know. Well, there's this poem. It is entitled simply Me. And in fact, I wrote the poem, and then I learned about the type of performing poetry known as cantistoria. And what that is a poem or short story spoken or sung with graphic visual accompaniment. And I would typically accompany this very autobiographic poem with pictures from my life. My parents were photojournalists. I dabble. Jason and Heather are photographers. All these pictures, all their pictures and more are included in this, along the way in this poem. But I'm just going to do it for you straight now. This work is entitled simply Me, and I hope that you like me. I ain't too tired to judge no more the man that I've become. Faults and scars and regrets, yeah, I got me some. Growing up in the Midwest, mid-20th century, may have been just black and white, but it was good enough for me. What makes a man take the occasion of a trip around the sun to reflect philosophically about all that he has done? There were pretty girls that I once knew, and there were chances that I probably blew. There were hotel bars and racing cars and you. A half century and five, and I am still alive. All those chances, all the risks, memories embedded on vinyl discs. How the hell did I even chance to survive? Now, I ain't got no pearl wisdom to finish off this poem. I got no final kernel of truth that you can take on home. I guess that all that I'm just trying to say on this orbit round the sun is that I ain't too tired to judge no more the man that I've become. So I write a lot of poetry to give as gifts. Birthdays, wedding gifts, eulogies. You know, you might get, for your wedding reception, you might get 3 fondue sets and return 2 of them and only take one out when Aunt Betty, who gave you one, comes over to visit, just to prove that you really do use it, and then you pull out the wrong one anyway, you return to Aunt Betty's. But if you get a poem from a poet for a wedding present, you ain't getting another one like that, and you ain't taking it back, because poets don't take poems back. But this is the first poem I ever had published, and it's a eulogy of all things. And it's entitled Missing Fiona, and I hope you hate it as much as I hated writing it. Why do I still see you, though I know that you are gone? You aren't perched on the back porch rail anymore, yet there's your shadow stretched across the lawn. When I come down from upstairs now, I still say, hey, scoot over, babe. You were always curled up and taking my seat. How long before that habit fades? It's not that you would ever move. Can a cat even be trained? You just look up at me with those big dark eyes, your expression one of total disdain. But after I had moved you, you would crawl back on my lap, and after obligatory petting and purring, you would go back to your nap. I'm still cleaning up your cat hair like you had never left. Freeform weaving under a chair. Our times warp and our times weft. Sometimes I'll find a gray hair on my robe. Too long, so I know it isn't mine. But it's like you're sending a message to me through some weird portal in time. Sleep well, my old chum, beneath the old apple tree. Next to old friends of yours and new ones you will now meet. All too soon, I will join you, I suppose. To all life's beginnings, there must be an end. I look forward to seeing you, and you may nap on my lap once again. So that's just the kind of goofy stuff I do. I hope you like it. It's I'm not sure if it's for other people or just cheap psychotherapy for me, but if it's saving me $60 an hour, hey, what the hell.
All right, everyone, well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Drew Prost-Jensen today. He is my father-in-law. He's a great guy, one of the most knowledgeable artists I know, and a fantastic poet. So hope to see you next time, and have a great day.
Stay.
Yes.
Jason trying it a third time. Don't fuck it up this time, huh, dude?
Thank you for watching, everyone. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Spilling Ink.